Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now I can preach it like this, okay? Repent! Or I can tell you, change your mind. Preaching repentance in the area of consciousness of sins is dishonoring the work of Jesus.
Repentance means you realize you're guilty, that you deserve the wrath and punishment of God. You begin to realize that sin is in you, and you turn your back on it in every shape and form. You renounce the world, whatever the cost, and you deny yourself and take up the cross and go after Christ.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Whoa! Just flew in from... Wait a second, I actually drove. This is Wretched Radio. Had a lovely time this weekend in Atlanta. Didn't have to go very far to visit a lovely church. How could it not be? It's in a town called Crabapple, to talk about a subject that plagues us all. What is it? Depression, anxiety, a myriad of synonyms, frustration, worried, just a bit anxious, concerned, all of those synonyms that we use to describe what the Bible says is a sin. That's right. Jesus in John 14, 1 said, "Don't let your heart be troubled." He wasn't talking about being aware of something that is concerning. He wasn't talking about being sad at a funeral, being hurt by somebody. Those are all very godly emotions. We saw Jesus exhibit those, didn't we, in John chapter 11, when he wept at the death of a friend, the funeral, seeing the results of sin, he was troubled. Jesus, when he was being betrayed by a friend, was troubled. It's okay to have those feelings, but we're not supposed to be anxious worriers, fretting. What happens if this and then that? It's out of control. I'm at the hands of fate. That is faithless worrying. Jesus forbids it, and then he gives us the tools to deal with it. Because the Bible is not just a theology book that is a checklist of beliefs. Okay, I believe in the Trinity. Yeah, okay, got it. I understand the character and the nature of God. Yep, got it. I understand sin. Mm-hmm. That's not what Christian faith is. It's a faith that is in alignment with reality, because it is reality, and it is the only thing that can straighten out our crooked. And yet, we continue to listen to the world tell us how to deal with these issues. For instance, here's some ways that you could deal with anxiety. Yoga. Received an email with this article from KCRA TV. Teacher at an elementary school teaching the kids yoga to deal with their big feelings. I just notice kids struggling a lot with anxiety, worries, getting so frustrated and not really knowing how to deal with their big feelings, said the teacher. And so they're doing the yoga, the mindfulness, the breathing exercises. Do those things help? Yes and no. There's something about breathing that does tend to calm you down, but does it help you think right about a situation? No, it doesn't. It might, like alcohol, in some way kind of numb it, distract, or just keep you from thinking about it as intensely. But that doesn't mean your problem is solved. Doesn't mean the issue is fixed. First grader, I'll leave the kid's name out, said it gives his brain time to relax and focus. Well, perhaps it does. It just doesn't teach him how to deal with frustrations. The teacher said she never had the tools and strategies to deal with it when she was a kid. Well, that's because she probably wasn't taught that the Bible is practical. It applies to our thinking. It's as simple as this. Why am I worried about anything when God is for me? Nothing befalls me that God did not ordain. So why would I possibly be worried about anything? And you can go on and on with the practical teachings of the Bible to help you with anxiety. Do that in a book called Stressed Out. You can get that at wretched.org if you'd care to. But the Bible is loaded with practical helps, and so it was a joy to be at a church talking about these issues to help people who are struggling. How badly? Well, I'm glad you asked. Teen girls who sexed may be more likely to be depressed and anxious. So there was a big study that was done about 800 teenage girls, 821 female students from 14 schools. Now, this happens to be in Croatia. I don't know why they chose Croatia, but nevertheless, big study. They think that girls who text are more depressed and anxious. Where do you begin with that double whammy of tragedy? The research found teens who sexted more often were more likely to have negative family environments and more experiences with peer pressure than less frequent sexters. For today's teens, sexting is more common than ever before. How tragic. But researchers are still unsure how the practice of sending and receiving explicit images affects the teens, especially female teens, psychologically. Pick me, I can tell ya. It's not going to help you feel better because you're not supposed to be doing those things. And anytime we do those things, we groan. It's Psalm 32. David had committed sin. He hadn't confessed his sin. What happened? He was wasting away. That's what sin does. When we sin and it's not confessed, it eats you alive. And that is why the Bible comes along and says, confess your sins and you will be reminded of God's grace and forgiveness, and then you won't be depressed. And yet the world continues in their folly, trying to come up with systems and means and ways of feeling better, and none of them will help. They're all futile. The Bible is the sufficient solution. Read Psalm 119, all over Psalm 119. It is sufficient for resisting temptation. It is sufficient for wisdom, how to do life, how to figure things out, how to make sense of reality. It's sufficient for comfort. It's sufficient for everything. We see Jesus battling temptation. How? Matthew 4, Luke 4, with Scripture. We've got everything we need in that book. And so it was a joy to be at Crabapple First Baptist Church Sunday. And I learned some things because on Saturday night, we did a bit of a symposium on the issue of depression and suicide. And Luke, the fellow who organized everything at the church, doing a bang-up job, he brought in some people who are biblical counselors. Mom and Dad, you might want to remember this. You parent as you see fit. But for whatever this is worth, I was struck by this. Considering the statistics that depression and suicide, in particular suicide, it's the number two leading cause of death among millennials and Gen X, Z, the kids. And it's happening in schools. I just talked to somebody who said at Georgia Tech, they believe that there's about a suicide a semester. Kids in great schools, bright futures, taking their own lives. Do you think the kids are talking about this at school? Do you think the kids are having conversations about this? Do you think the kids are ever bringing up to others about the 13 reasons, the Netflix show on suicide? Of course they are. And so one of the counselors said, Mom and Dad, start making suicide a word that gets used in your home. There's kind of a shock value to the word because it's a shocking event. But talk about it regularly enough that your kids, should they be struggling with it, considering it themselves, that they feel comfortable in coming to you should those feelings arise in them. This is almost sadly like the birds and bees conversation that we need to have with our kids. That it needs to be sooner than we would prefer, but nevertheless, at appropriate levels for our kids, starting probably quite early in their lives, and maybe you need to add suicide to that list because the kids are dealing with it. They're getting bombarded at schools with sexual teaching. There was just an article. I don't even want to, but they're teaching the kids and trying to mandate that they teach the kids how to do sexual acts that are just... There was a town in the Old Testament that got destroyed. We used to use that word to describe that act. They're teaching it to kids as normative behavior. So if you don't teach your kids, the world is going to. And the same thing could be true with suicide. And that is shocking to consider. But maybe, just maybe, it's something that you want to add to your parental list of duties, things that you need to get to probably sooner than later, because the kids are indeed talking about it. They are taking their lives, and give them a Christian perspective. and help them to understand, look, if you bring this up, your parents are not going to be staggered that you maybe are having these thoughts. Food for thought, mom and dad. Also, some parenting advice that I just thought was so helpful. Can you recognize the signs? And one of the counselors said, a lot of times you can't. So you can Google the signs on the internet. We've talked about them here. But just note that frequently people take their lives and nobody had a clue that it was happening. And you shouldn't pistol whip yourself if you miss something. But just note, having that relationship with your kids where they're willing to talk to you, having that sort of a relationship, you have to figure out how to do this yourself, mom and dad. But if you're busy teaching theology, that is tremendous. Don't stop doing that. But never let it be at the expense of relationship, because then you're undermining the former with the lack of the latter. So make sure that you're fostering that so that your kids know that you can be a safe harbor, that they don't need to go to a counselor at school who probably wouldn't inform you anyway, that you are the safest people that there are to discuss an issue that sadly is all too often on the hearts and minds of our own kids. So thanks to Crabapple First Baptist. This is Wretched Radio. Tempted, but I'm not gonna do it.
Some churches in the rural areas in Zimbabwe, you get to a church with about 200 members. You only find one person with one Bible.
So tempted to say, you know, for just the cost of a cup of coffee, but I'm not gonna do that. But we could change that statistic. There are churches all over the globe, 200 people attending a church with one Bible. $5 will purchase a new Bible for a believer. Bible League International, historically proficient, sound, reliable. Let's get some Bibles into the hands of believers so they don't have to be sharing paragraphs until the next service. Please support Bible League International, wretched.org/Bible.
Without sounding too much like a mafia don, here's an offer you can't refuse. Wretched would like to give you up to 20 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And Other Intriguing Questions on the Road Trip to Truth. You heard me right. We want to give you these beautiful, thorough gospel booklets. But there are two strings attached. Well, really tiny strings, more like fishing line. Actually, thread would be better. You pay for shipping only, and you promise to give them away to the atheist or agnostic in your life who believes that evolution disproves the existence of God. Go to wretched.org/purple today and get your copies of What Time is Purple? It's also a great idea for the student in your life who's heading off to school, or anyone who doubts that the Bible is true. Get your copies of What Time is Purple at wretched.org/purple. And thanks very much to the generosity of our gospel partners who make this giveaway possible.
When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11, another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month. You'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is the ability to discern between true and false spirits. Satan masquerades as an angel of light, and many false teachers present their lies as God's truth. But God has given us His truth, and He has equipped us to tell true from false in accordance with His word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Speaking of Georgia Tech, this is Wretched Radio. Not too far from us, a lovely institution. I believe it's the number two technology university in the country. It's a good school. It's a lovely campus. And wow, does it cost a lot to go to that school. Talking to a friend about Georgia Tech, an individual who used to work there, describing budgets and that the strings are pretty tight there when it comes to spending money. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. My understanding is it costs like $40,000, $50,000 a year for a full-time, I believe that includes campus living, to go to that school, which isn't all that uncommon these days. I just saw a headline someplace saying, get ready for six figures. What? When it comes to education for a year. And I thought, what is going on? How can school be so expensive, budget so tight? And so I decided to do a little sleuthing. When online, you can Google pretty much anything these days. And I Googled the salaries of Georgia Tech. Are you sitting down? I'm not going to give the individuals' names because that wouldn't be cool. But just to let you know where the money is going at universities, and maybe helping us understand why 70% of kids at university want to vote socialist. Man, Silla. The president makes $1.1 million, consuming part of the $1.6 billion budget at Georgia Tech. A coach, I don't know what he coaches, $750,000.
Probably football.
Provost, $689,000. The chief athletics administrator, $679,000. Wait a second. I thought that the mindset at university campuses was that it should all be equal. Not at all. The dean, $549,000. A professor makes $516,380.98. That does not include book deals and other side businesses that he or she may be involved in. A professor, $516,000. The chief research officer, $490,000. Another coach, $481,000. The chief business finance administrator, whatever that is, $469,000. A professor, $424,000. Another prof, $407,000. Another prof, $397,000. A coach, $390,000. A professor, $380,000. Associate professor, $375,000. Chief development and advancement. I think that's the fancy term for he's the one who encourages people to give their money so that he can make $374,261 a year. Man. Coach, $372,000. Dean, $370,000. Professor, $370,000. Coach, $369,000. Another professor, $350,000. Another prof, $346,000, $346,000, $342,000, $338,000, $333,000. Associate prof, $332,000, $866,000, and 66 pennies. A prof, $330,000. Another prof, $327,000. The vice president, he needs a new manager. $319,000, prof, $315,000, $311,000, $310,000, $309,000, $307,000, $306,000, $305,000, $156,000. That's page one of like 27 pages. No, I don't have a head cold. I'm smelling the irony that these are the same professors who will teach kids that capitalism is terrible, and yet they're making a fortune as the kids rack up debt. Then they hear somebody like Bernie or one of the other socialists talking about, we'll wipe out your debt. Sounds like a good plan to me. Who is it that is setting these prices? Well, who owns Georgia Tech? Last time I checked, it's built into their name, Georgia. Who sets the prices? The government. Who gives out the loans? Not private anymore. The government. And the kids are graduating with massive debt set by the government, who then teaches them that capitalism is bad, and therefore, to get their debt wiped out that the government created, they would like to encourage your kids to vote socialist. P.U. Mike Rowe is a fellow who's famous for odd jobs, dirty jobs.
Dirty jobs,
stuff that other people don't want to do. And once again, raising the question, not begging the question, raising the question, what is a dirty job? I mean, it could be just a term that you use for a job that gets you dirty. You know, you work with your hands. You work with the dirt, oil, what have you. Well, that could be why it's called a dirty job. Or is it called a dirty job because, well, that's just the stuff that, well, some of us just don't want to do. Now, I am not suggesting for a moment that a student shouldn't further education. That's not the point. Go ahead. We become educated because God is educated. That is the Christian's primary motivation for becoming smarter. It's not to make more money. It's so that we can be more like God. Should money trail along, so be it. But we get educated because God is educated. He's the source of all everything. And so to be like him, we study. That's why the Christian hits the books. So go ahead, get an education, get your master's, your whatever. That's not the point of it. But let's be careful that we don't join the chorus of the world that says, that's the clean job, that's the better job. Ooh, on dirty jobs. And so Mike Rowe, he's touring around, I think he's got himself a book, talking to Stuart Varney on Fox Business, that we're not teaching shop classes anymore. We have unintendedly maligned an entire section of our workforce by promoting one form of education at the expense of all of the other forms. Ain't that the truth? Should somebody get a college education? Sure, if they want to. And I wouldn't say, you're going to do that and rack up debt. Not saying that. But at the same time, we need to stop looking down on jobs that are considered dirty. Who writes that rule? Who determines what is a quality job or, you're a get-your-hands-dirty kind of worker? That's the world. The Bible would actually indicate the opposite, that working with your hands, creating something, that's a blessing. The Bible doesn't tell us that somebody who unplugs toilets, God doesn't see it that way at all. That is a message from the world that makes people feel bad because they don't have the glitzy job. What is a glitzy job? Who tells us these things? It's not scripture. It's society, and we need to shut out those voices. Mike Rowe. The skills gap today is a result of the removal of shop class and the repeated message that the best path for most people happens to be the most expensive path. Again, I'm not going to swing into a ditch and try to shame anybody who goes to Georgia Tech or anywhere else. But let's stop shaming, especially in the church, people who don't. That decision needs to be made by the individual, parents, pastors, but not the world. We currently have a $1.6 trillion student loan debt. With 7.3 million open positions for laborers, people who go to tech school, electricians and plumbers and HVAC people. And those don't require a four-year degree. And there is honor in those things. The world has a different set of standards. Christians, we shouldn't. Mom and Dad, what do you do with this in your home? It's up to you. But please note, if you've got, let's just say, a son who loves working with his hands, but just saying, doesn't have to get the four-year degree. There's honor in doing those types of jobs. And by the way, they're paying quite well these days. I don't know if you've seen what you can make as an electrician. You can do quite well, thank you very much. And these roles are needed, are they not? Seriously, do we need more people in some of these glitzy industries creating more whatever it is that they do? Let me tell you, when your toilet is backed up, you need a plumber. We need plumbers. We need laborers. We need stuff built. We need people who can put bricks on top of one another in a straight way where they stay in place and the buildings don't collapse on our heads. So let's not join the world in their messages. Find the balance. Whatever the kid's gifting is, go in that direction as you see fit. Racking up that massive debt, hoofta, you need to make that decision. But let us not shame people who have what the world claims are dirty jobs, because they are not dirty to God and they shouldn't be to us. This is Wretched Radio.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough law and gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org.
Books of the Bible. Ezekiel was a prophet and priest in Israel. The language in the book of Ezekiel is often symbolic and figurative, but the message is clear. God rules over and judges men and nations. When you are tempted by sin, Ezekiel reminds us that God is holy and has called his people to holiness. He will go to great lengths to purge evil from among them. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you could lend me a hand reading an article in the Washington Post. Something I didn't think that we pro-life Christians were going to have to consider, but lo and behold, it looks like we're going to have to rethink an issue again, because in Texas, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, there's a group of Christian women's health centers that are now going to offer contraception and contraceptive devices and IUDs and pills. And now we're going to have to rethink that issue. Is this a good idea to keep people from getting pregnant, or does it promote people living sinful lifestyles? And so it is in this particular lengthy article in the Washington Post. There's a quote from one of the individuals who's an OBGYN, who's all for this type of clinic that is called Christian, that helps people keep from getting pregnant. One of the biggest misconceptions she faces is from people who think providing contraception will encourage women to become promiscuous. Yep. So here's what she said. Help me understand this, because I cannot noodle through this. She said, if I as a doctor tell people, lock up your guns, I'm not encouraging violent behavior. So let's empower people with education. Huh? Joey, do you get that?
No, that's a pretty weak analogy.
I don't think it's an analogy that makes sense at all. I'm trying. Believe me, I want to be fair here, but that doesn't make any sense. Now, is there something of an argument to be made about if you tell people to not sin, but then provide them with contraception? Is that going to give them the mindset that says, well, then I can go ahead and do that activity? Even if you say don't do that activity, but should you choose to, here you go. It's the story of the parents. The kid is going off to prom. Hey, don't do anything you'll regret, but if you do, here's a prophylactic device. It undermines the message. And I think just about every Christian parent would go, no. It's like saying, hey, look, son, you're 14. And I know that you maybe have a desire to drive an automobile. Don't do that. But if you do, here's the keys to my car. Doesn't quite make sense. And so to say, if I as a doctor tell people, lock up your guns, I'm not encouraging violent behavior. I don't even quite get that. And so now, Christian, be prepared for a new wave in pro-life ministry. Something preborn isn't doing. They offer ultrasounds. They preach the gospel, which is what stops the cycle. This so undermines God's plan for how we're supposed to be doing these things. We've lost such sight of God's rules and how he wants this done and how it does not help anybody. Okay, so a woman doesn't get pregnant out of wedlock. Does that help her? It does not. It's going to still scar and wound. When we sin, we are hurting ourselves. No sin so mars like that of sexual sin. Just don't get this.
Wait, I've got it.
Yep.
If I tell people when they go skeet shooting to use blanks instead of live ammunition, then I'm... Okay, that falls apart.
Do you want to go to work?
Okay, locking up the guns would, in this analogy, be abstinence.
Right. Now that... Okay, so if we're going to work with her analogy, then abstinence would actually be a good thing. So I'll just change it. Let me go find it. It's on page like 84 in this ridiculously long article. If I tell people, do not have sex out of marriage, I'm not encouraging sex out of marriage. There, I can work with that. That's our message. Don't do the behavior that's going to result in a consequence that you're not prepared for. Instead, do it God's way. Besides that, I know that this is always kind of shocking to hear, but nevertheless, we need to be teaching our kids, I think, a balanced view of intimacy. You perhaps have made the mistake. I've made this mistake when we were raising our kids. You talk about sex like, no. What message are we sending the kids? Dirty, shameful, bad, don't do it. That's not correct. That's not biblical. Having that, doing that act outside of marriage, that's sinful. Doing the act under God's rules, magnificent, transcendent even. That's how we should be talking about this issue. Telling our kids, no, wait until you're married to the opposite gender. Need that caveat these days. To the opposite gender, because it will be more amazing. Now, I know that you think that being intimate is going to satisfy you. It's going to scratch an itch. Not the way it will if you're married, because it's transcendent in nature. And when you don't do it the right way, it might give you a temporary pleasure, but it won't be profound for you the way that it is inside of the context of marriage. Because remember, intimacy is theological. It is the physical pointer to a greater spiritual reality. Intimacy is a physical act that is the single most pleasant act two human beings can participate in, period. But is that it? No. It points to something greater that is going to be experienced by every believer who is in Christ in heaven. Ephesians 5 talks about this, that marriage, it's a picture of Jesus and the church. When we do this intimate act, it is merely a reminder. This is what it's going to be like in a non-sexual way when I get to heaven and I see my God face to face. In other words, you think sex is amazing. Wait till you get to heaven and you get to experience God. You get to be in his presence. You get to see him. You get to be in a correct relationship with him. Non-sexual, non-intimate. That just points to the greater spiritual reality. And that can only be experienced when it is done in the context of marriage. Otherwise, you're doing it wrong. And when we go about the business of saying to women, look, we don't want you to get pregnant. You don't want to get pregnant. So here's the keys to the car. Drive safely. When they don't have a license to operate the vehicle, it's not going to end well. It will not be as good. And that's why I think we're opposed to this new approach. Let's be providing ultrasounds. Let's be preaching the gospel. Here's another shocking statement. Dan Steiner at preborn.org/wretched says this all the time. It's important that we save babies' lives. It's more important that women get saved with the gospel. Because first of all, it affects their eternity. God gets more glory, and it stops this cycle. Not offering contraception, that just keeps it going and going and going. And it's not good for people. If we care for people, we don't do this. Because the best way to enjoy this issue, this beautiful gift, is doing it God's way. Now we continue. By the way, we need to understand, if you happen to be a Christian and you're dealing with the issue of contraception, can a Christian use any of these things? If it does not end the life of the child, if it does not end the life of sperm and egg meeting, not being implanted into the uterine wall, but that zygote, that's a human being. It's totipotent at conception. Not when it travels to the wall to be nourished and grow there. Immediately, if a contraceptive device takes that life, that's abortion. We don't do that. If you can have another form of contraception that keeps sperm from meeting egg, every Christian needs to figure this out for themselves. I don't believe that you are doing anything sinful. You need to be doing it thoughtfully. Now, it could be sinful like everything else, but I don't believe that it has to be sinful. With that caveat aside, the decision to provide contraception is a huge cultural shift for Christian centers that, for religious reasons, don't offer birth control. Right. What's the reason? They think that we've got a branding problem because it's mean to tell women, oop, don't be doing that act. We got to be a little hipper. We've got to be about more about women's health. Well, I have no problem about being for women's health, and I believe that if a Christian center wants to do that, knock yourself out. I believe there's all kinds of Christian health available at every doctor's office, but that's not what this issue is primarily about. This issue is primarily about baby health, because it's the baby's life that is at risk and in jeopardy, and whether it is an abortion through a surgical procedure or through medication that takes the life of a fertilized egg, which is a totipotent human being, that's the bigger issue. And we stand opposed to that on all fronts. Get ready. A new wave of new pro-life Christian ministries. We will be dealing with this, I fear. Support preborn.org/wretched. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for being here and listening to Wretched Radio today. And thanks to our gospel partners. Their generosity allows us to introduce our newest resource, Drive-By False Teaching. Todd, Phil Johnson, and Mike Vabarez will give you the tools you need to discern the truth from the false teaching. Wretched.org/false teaching to get your copy today. You know, the New Testament canon wasn't even closed, and two major heresies had already infiltrated the church. False teaching, it's a thing, but not a new thing. The devil, oh, he does love to repackage those old heresies and see if he can't deceive the contemporary church. Don't be deceived. Get your copy of Drive-By False Teaching today. Visit wretched.org/false teaching and be equipped to defend the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. You'll find your copy of Drive-By False Teaching today at wretched.org/false teaching. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
There are certain things people love getting for Christmas. You know, like new toys, new socks, the newest iPhone. There are things Wretched would love for Christmas too. Gospel partners. As this year is coming to a close, would you consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? You see, thanks to our gospel partners, you can find full episodes of Wretched Radio and TV at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other resources, for free. Without our gospel partners, there simply is no Wretched. So if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and want to continue to do so, would you please consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Every dollar you give will be faithfully stewarded. In fact, right now, 83% of every dollar goes directly towards ministry work. Get the details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Visit wretched.org/donate.
Important dates in Christian history. 1095. Pope Urban II launches the First Crusade to reclaim Jerusalem from Muslim control. The crowd wildly shouts, "God wills it." There would be several crusades over the next centuries, with many tragic results and consequences lasting for centuries. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Yeah, and just one more note on this, Dealey Bob. This is Wretched Radio, a new chain of Christian pregnancy centers providing contraception. Just to be clear, they are not providing abortifacients, at least not the morning after pill. There are pills that are contraceptions that do have an abortifacient element in them to be avoided by the Christian. But if there are other devices that are non-abortifacient loaded, IUDs that would not take the life of a fertilized egg, aka a human being, I do not believe those things are sinful. So could a pro-life center distribute those things? And I think that I think the answer to that question is, well, I suppose they could if it is going to whom? That's the issue. If it is a husband and a wife that have talked through this issue, they are on the same page together, I guess. Now, those things, I believe, can be they can be received elsewhere, but I guess you could do that. The concern is that it's being given to anyone and everyone, which would indeed promote promiscuity. Let's get to another story that maybe will have something to do with the life issue. New York governor. That's usually enough just to kind of let you know this is going to be about a bad decision. Andrew Cuomo passed a new law that bans churches from speaking about politics. Uh-oh. A new law is a version of the federal Johnson Amendment, which bars nonprofit entities like religious organizations from endorsing candidates or donating to political campaigns. Well, then, it seems that in New York, you're going to have to be careful, Pastor, how you talk and what you say. Should a pastor be talking about politics? Well, sure, if it has to do with the text. If it has to do with an issue that is imminent for the congregation, he has the ability, to make that decision. Should he be endorsing candidates? I think that's frankly up to him. But what if the government says, no, you can't do that? What if the government said to our churches, you can't talk about politics? Now, it raises some questions. What does that mean? Can I talk about issues that land in the political realm like abortion? If they would keep us from preaching about that, I would say that that's a problem and we can't obey that. We're talking about human lives here. But what about this issue of the government saying to nonprofit organizations, and that's what churches are, they really, as long as they're doing a worship service, there's a difference between a religious nonprofit 501c3 organization and a church which does a worship service. Tax returns, that's not necessary. And that is why you see these charlatans on TV who bilk people for millions and millions of dollars. And why don't they get into any sort of trouble or scrutiny from the government? Because they don't get scrutinized. That's the current law. Suspect that might change. So what if the government tells your church, you can't talk about politics. It's going to be election season next year. Nothing. You can't say anything. You got a problem with that? This would be one of those issues that you'd have to determine, like Peter, when he was told to stop preaching the gospel. Sorry, can't obey you, authority. I've got to preach the gospel. We'd agree on that. Politics? Does that fall underneath that Peter protection, that we don't have to obey the government? You're going to have to decide that. Because if New York leads the way, we'll be back to having that conversation, too. Just a reminder, the First Amendment states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Except, apparently, in New York City. Governments, they historically have done things that the church doesn't always like much. Speaking of which, churchleaders.com, life in North Korea for Christians. If you think that story out of New York is troublesome, try being a Christian in North Korea. I'm telling you. Got to be praying for our Christian brothers and sisters. There's no place worse than North Korea. And that's exactly, by the way, what Open Doors, they study Christian persecution around the globe. Being a Christian in North Korea has been at the top of its world watch list for persecuted Christians 18 years in a row. You think it's bad in America? Move to North Korea. Nobody really says that, do they? You know, I think I'd like to emigrate to North Korea and live there for a while. However, despite the church persecution in North Korea, experts estimate there are between 200,000 and 400,000 Christians in North Korea. Now, it's a small percentage of the 25 million population. Nevertheless, you've got pushing 500,000 Christians in North Korea. What is life like for them? I couldn't help but think about Randy Alcorn's book, Safely Home. If you've never read it, it's an oldie, but it's a goodie. It's not dated. And this is a reminder. Do you remember reading that book about the persecuted church in China and believers there because the Bible was outlawed? And by the way, speaking of which, do you know, let me see if I can find that article, in North Korea, or in China rather, that they have been outlawing the sale of books. I want to make sure that I get this right. The sale of books since like 2018, that selling books or any theological books is a no-no there. That's I can't find it. Something like, I'll find it one of these days. It's in one of my stacks. And in North Korea, owning a Bible, it's against the law. And so what do? Just like Safely Home, they cut out pages, they distribute the pages so you don't have the whole book, and then sometimes they'll memorize the book or the page and then destroy it so that they can't be arrested because it's considered a criminal act. And you can be sent to prison for the rest of your life for owning a Bible. So how many Bible studies do you think they have? Commentaries? Sermons? Look, there's a lot of bad stuff going on inside of the Christian church in America. We're all fully aware of that, but let's not overlook all the good stuff, too. Vodi Bakum pointed this out to me at the Truth Matters conference. He's living in Africa now with Christian African University, and he realizes, you know, from this perspective, there's an awful lot of good available in the Christian church in America. That's a needed perspective. North Korea, you can go to jail for having a Bible. Which is a reminder, you can only imagine their longing. Another great organization you can support, Bible League International. Please, wretched.org/Bible, $5 a Bible for the persecuted church. Get them a Bible. They're getting into all kinds of places. We'll just leave it at that. Being a Christian in North Korea means they live in constant fear in every area of life. There's actually a group of leaders. They're in all these towns. You get paid if you turn a Christian in. They're the Christian police. They now have the duties of searching homes, punishing any violators found with religious materials, conducting religious practices, or even simply praying a prayer over their food. Violators are tortured in imprisonment camps, and some face execution if they refuse to give up their beliefs. Maybe it's not quite that bad yet. Speaking of China, this is not definitive yet, but it appears in China that these people who get put into these labor camps, that is not a weekend at the Ritz. Let me tell you something. They believe that they're selling organs from those people, taking their organs from them in brutal ways. Organ harvesting. And the anecdotes are just adding up, often performed when the victim is still alive. Check out this story. I can't say their names. A lady of the Falun Gong faith was a victim of the harrowing practice. He was arrested. Her dad was arrested in 2008, sent to a forced labor camp. On the afternoon of January 27, 2009, she and three other family members went to visit him. His mental health and physical health, it was normal. Then 3:40 the next day, the labor camp called and said he died immediately and hung up. Seven of my family members arrived at the mortuary with the guidance of police officers. They read out the regulations. We could see the body for only 5 minutes, no cameras or communication devices, and we could only go to the freezer room to see his head and not his whole body. But when her older sister touched his face, she screamed that his philtrum was still warm and his upper teeth were biting his lower lip because he was alive. We pulled out my father's body halfway. We touched his chest. It was warm. He was wearing a down jacket. We tried to perform CPR, but we were forcibly dragged out of the freezer by four people. Uninformed plainclothes officers pushed my father's body back into the freezer. They demanded we quickly sign for cremation and pay the fees. They've sought justice. They can't get any. This is a nightmare. And this is going on in countries from wicked governments with our Christian brothers and sisters. Support Bible League, wretched.org/Bible, and be praying for our Christian brothers and sisters we can't even imagine. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.